Welcome to Six Again, your go-to rugby league podcast with hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Newton. Let's kick off.
All right, sun's out, guns out.
Yeah, Adam's flexing over here.
Don't know what. My week of sport, I don't think I've had a worse week of sporting results for teams that I follow or tips that I've had or anything like that in recent memory. It has not been good. So I've got nothing to flex about. But it's also humid as hell here because there's a storm overhead. So, yes, sun's out, guns out.
It's all good.
It's all good. Yeah. Ready to go.
Adam had a bit of a funeral over the week. The Roger Federer retired. His favorite athlete.
Biggest sports story of the year.
He's struggling a little bit on that note.
Yeah.
I'm a bit disappointed too. He was just elite for so long. No problems. No issues. He just talked himself well. And the photos he's been releasing lately of, you know, him, Novak, Rafa, it just being, you sit there and you're like, holy shit. Like, the quality of person in that, well, not person, sorry, but quality yes. of tennis players in that team.
Oh, yeah. And the era of tennis that is still going. He started him, Nadal, Djokovic, and to a lesser extent, Murray. There won't be something like that for a long time.
All three of them are once in a generation of players.
Yeah.
And they all played at the same time, and there's rotating major slams. Like, if they were just playing within their generation without any competitive, they just would have won every Grand Slam rolling around. But you just knew when a final between one of those three was coming up, it was just going to be epic. And for me, who genuinely is not the biggest fan of tennis, but watch his finals with Federer and Djokovic and Nadal, it's magic watching it. Yeah, holy shit.
He's the amount of times I got up at 1 a.m., 2 a.m., whatever it was, to watch him in Wimbledon. It is ridiculous. And he was at the forefront of this generational shift. And in a generation of power, power was never part of his. He was finesse, it was skill. It was,
and it was like Cam Smith.
Oh, it was just...
It was like watching Cam Smith play, because he was always a couple shots ahead of his opponent, and which was just amazing. And he was fit, but he wasn't as fit as, say, Nadal. Nadal leaned more with the power play and the fitness, where he just overcame you with his constant in the back. But it was a great comparison watching them two play, because, as you said, finesse versus power and fitness has just been... It's just epic, or everywhere you look at it. And I think the biggest compliment for him being in the spotlight for so long is that he was just a good dude as well. Yeah. He was just a good bloke. And, he enjoyed his tennis. There was no drama. I don't think he would have ever broken a racket.
Oh, he did as a teenager. He was fiery as hell.
Yeah, but someone obviously calmed his shit.
Yes.
And he just became the elite.
It, to me, he's the GOAT. He's got a losing record against Nadal and Djokovic, but how he played and the consistency that he'd had, and Nadal's obviously close to that, but Federer could win games in different ways, more so, in my opinion. But he's just and the character off the court, and then the respect that he has of the current players, the past players, and in the same week of the Queen dying, the same week, while it hasn't got as much maybe cover in mainstream media, there's still stuff popping up today and people aren't sick of it. Just throwing it out there.
We should have a public holiday for that.
Well, that's what it's been 22 years or something since Cathy Freeman's gold medal. I'm like, there's a public holiday. So I had a look at this. So worst week in sport. Wallabies got belted. Both my tips lost in Cowboys and South. My baseball team was knocked out of playoff contention by our closest rival. My NFL team lost. There was no Premier League or F1 on. Federer retires and loses his last finals match. And the only time I pay any attention to the AFL, if Sydney gets to a grand final, and they did and they lost. And then both the NRLW games that we went to lost, and so did my tip for the Q Cup final. I was like, oh my God, I'm cursed. And of course, my value bets didn't win either. So let's bring on this week, eh?
Well, good news for me. My little brother had his 21st birthday on Saturday.
Is that what that party was? Thanks for the invite, Danny. I'm assuming it was Danny.
Yeah, well, yep, he was like 25 at this point. Yeah, so happy birthday, Danny. Good night. I had to tap out early because I had the baby. But it was a pretty good night. Everyone had fun. So happy birthday, Danny.
All right. How about we get to some footy? Because people are probably going, this is so fucking boring. We don't care about your social lives. All right, cool. 1 week to go in the tipping comp sponsored by Hop Nation. If you haven't seen our social media, the prize is up there. So get on Twitter or Facebook, or it's not on Instagram, I think. No, I haven't put it on there. But it looks awesome. And with a big result this week, we could have a doozy going into the final round. So we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players tip both winners this week. And the big one there that really matters is the underscore Irk. After only getting one last week, the three this week has tied them up on the top of the ladder with Rocking Horse Road, both on 170 points going into the last round, being the grand final. And assuming one will be on 172, one will be on 170, or they'll both be on 172, or they'll both be on 170. So depending on who they tip. Then in third place, you got Spencer Blues on 164. And then you got Reggie Sidestep, Shakopolips, and myself on 163, all in the fight there for third place still with Spencer Blues. No one below that can get a place. So sorry, Methodical Flamethrower, you'll miss out by a point. Because even if you get two, you'll get to 163, which won't be enough to get into third position. If there is a tie on whatever the first place is, we are going to go back on full rounds and see which of the two have the most full rounds, and we'll split it that way. But congratulations, Rocking Horse Road and the underscore Irk. Tied points going into the final round, which I would not have predicted, in all honesty.
So one of you have to pick Power, the other one has to pick Penrith.
Yeah, you guys can discuss amongst yourselves in some way.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to start with the Penrith Football Club and the historical feat that they have already achieved and may still add to. So if you didn't see over the weekend, they won the SG Ball, the Jersey Flag, and the New South Wales Cup Grand Finals, meaning that they've got three of the four Premier Rugby League competition titles already wrapped up, which is an extraordinary achievement. To have that much depth and structure and consistency and all the work behind the scenes and the coaches and all that, to have an entire club achieving success at the same time, is incredible, because it literally means players at the end of this season that are too old for the previous team are going to move into a grand final winning team from a grand final winning team. And once you've got something like this set up, it should be, if kept together, a snowball effect for years to come. It's ridiculous. And all I can say is congratulations. The Penrith scored a 29-22 win over Canterbury in the New South Wales Cup. And this hasn't happened since 1982. The Balmain Tigers are the last club to do that. They won a golden point field goal victory over Newcastle, sorry, Jared, 1918 in the Jersey Flag. Kicked by Isaiah Katoa, who's off to the Dolphins. And I'd say now the bloody score of the SG Bulls escaped me. But either way, it's crazy. It's just a ridiculous achievement.
Yeah. So, and then coming up on a close second and third of that is that Newcastle and Parramatta are both in two grand finals this weekend. So congratulations to them.
Canterbury, yeah.
Newcastle, sorry.
I was reading Canterbury.
Newcastle were played it, yeah, in the Jersey Flag and in the NRL Women's, so good work. But yeah, you're right. Like, I think I made a point early in the year, the start of the year, with, you know, the fact that Penrith have got a lot of, like, when they got rid of Josh Mansour, I think 2 years ago, it was more about what their recruitment and retention is going to be like, because, you know, you've got so many gun players who are playing in the same team, the salary cap kind of gets in your way. But as alluding to Adam's point, is that if you've got New South Wales Cup strong and you've got Jersey Flegg strong, your recruitment and your retention becomes more important than your recruitment, because, you know, you've got a lot of players Adam just drank something and he's struggling. You got a lot of players coming through the competition who will be on cut price deals, but, you know, are killing it in the lower grades. So your retention becomes more important. So congratulations to Penrith. And on that note, God damn it, anyone who doesn't give respect to Phil Gould, like, he deserves some of the credit. Let's move on to the
next topic. Here we go.
He deserves some of the credit for this, and you can't deny it. Come on, dude.
Sure.
Come on.
Good on him. There you go.
No, you got to – come on, man. You can't say he didn't have a leading hand in this.
Yes.
Oh, you're – fuck off.
I won't give him anything for Jersey Club or SG Ball, because he would have been gone before then.
No, but he put all the things in place to produce these players, and he came in and essentially made it a priority to focus on the nursery instead of the NRL team, and it's paid dividends now.
Congratulations on Gus Gould's offspring.
You can't deny that, dude. Come on.
Yeah, no, his fingers are fat enough to be in a lot of different things, so congratulations. But I was looking at...
he's got King Charles fingers.
You know what I found out today? And not this is how much I pay attention to you. I thought King Charles was the Queen's husband.
You're a potato.
He's her son.
Yeah, he's Diana's first husband. Diana's only.
Yeah, husband. Don't ever bring poor Diana into this for that sort of matchup. But the chick he's married to is can't be called Camilla. The Queen, because he divorced in the first marriage or something. Anyway, yeah, she's like a concubine. It's great.
She's a consort, you flog.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I was like, that's brilliant. Samoa have announced their World Cup squad.
How good is their team?
I don't know what the team's going to be like. The squad's pretty good. How big's a squad? They've only named 24, whereas some teams have named like 32. But
I think it depends on the club, and I think it depends on the governing body of that country who can afford to travel people or travel how many, 34 people all over the country plus support staff.
Yeah, so my concern, as it almost always is with the Pacific Island Nation teams, is the halves. Not that they're not talented, they are, but
they're very similar. Ngannou and Jerome Luai?
No, it's Jerome Luai and Anthony Milford will be the two. Or you've got Chanel Harris-Davida.
It won't affect them. It won't affect them until they get into the final stages. Because their forwards are going to overrun everyone else and their backs are just going to be able to too powerful. It's going to make their halves look very, very strong. But until they come up against the Australia, the Englands, the New Zealands,
Who's going to be the kicker?
The powerful Jamaican team. That's when it's going to be a problem.
I love the sad eye tweet I saw today of Fox League bringing out the big guns to analyze the World Cup, leaning on Paul Kent in his one game of experience. I was like, oh, bloody brilliant. So
NRL, not World Cup. He's never played in the World Cup. Allowed near World Cup reporting or otherwise.
Again, we're not going to read out the entire squad there, but it is a very solid squad. And hopefully they can bridge the gap between them and Tonga. Tonga being the more successful of the Pacific Islander nations. So hoping they can bridge that gap and make the matches intense, enjoyable and tight all the way through to the end. All right, as we are in awards season, bring up a bit of a storyline with regards to the Dally M. So remember, the voting for this went behind closed doors after round 12. And it's a very open race at that stage. Ben Hunt was on 19, Isaiah Yeo 17, Nico Hines 16, Pappenhausen and Moses 15, Tedesco 14, Cherry Evans 13, Edwards 13, Munster 12, Reynolds 11. As we've seen how the season's played out, I think we could comfortably rule out Cherry Evans, Reynolds, Pappenhausen, which leaves Hunt, Yo, Hines, Moses, Tedesco, Edwards. You'll probably rule out Munster as well, I would say. Who do you think's in best position there? This is Ben Hunt with a 2-point lead. Remember, they still had 13 rounds to play.
All right, I'm going well on this one, and I can't. Yeah. I laughed at him at the start of the year, but yeah. Ben Hunt and
midway in.
Yeah, I laughed at him a lot, but fuck me, he's played well. I think it was around 18 or 19, I reckon. But I was kind of like, ooh, he might be right here. So yeah, I wonder well if Ben Hunt wins, but I wouldn't be surprised if he did. No, I'd actually be quite happy if he did because he's had a
tremendous season.
Well, I wouldn't say breakout because he was probably. I think the biggest compliment you can give him is that he probably hasn't redeemed himself for what happened in 2015 Grand Final, but with what happened in Origin, him scoring that winning try, I think he feels he's evened it up because there's no way he took that hangover after what happened in 2015 for a few years and wasn't as potent. But this year, I think he's mentally stronger this year, and I like it.
Yeah, I can see that. And I don't think once you've had a moment like that in your career, and people remember negative things more so than positive things. And I think Brett Camorley is still a victim of that. Despite, I think, New South Wales winning the series, so many people still remember his intercept pass that he ballooned over for Matt Bowen to intercept and win a game for Queensland. You've got the Justin Hodges double throwbacks in the in-goal in both the Roosters and Origin series. Ben Hunt, obviously, not gone off the kickoff. Those sort of
moments where
Darren Lockyer,
yeah, you're right,
jumping on the loose pass in that State of Origin for Queensland to start their run.
And which is funny because Darren Lockyer is the one who kicked the ball for the charge down of Freddie Fittler in his last game.
It's funny. So I don't think anything will ever do that, but I also think the intercept that he took for that series is also going to be as well remembered. It's one of those.
I hope so.
I really do. And
yeah,
I'm looking at the other. This is a pretty big call considering how good a season he had. But I think based on how he finished the season, will cost Tedesco the middle part of the season. He's going to bulk gain so many points. But I think I agreed with Wall said he had a brilliant season, but the last three rounds or so, there were better players in the team. Joey Manu's going to take points off him for a couple of performances as well, which could hurt him. Nico Hines, to me, is the smoky because the games that the Sharks won were generally his best games. And while Matt Moylan had a good burst through, say, 6 weeks where he was really good, and this was his best season in quite a while, I think Nico Hines was comfortably the best player in the Sharks over the whole season. But I agree. I think Hunt's got that same thing in his, like that same situation in his corner, but even more so. Games were won and lost for the Dragons based on Ben Hunt. And also not lost, even. They were won because of Ben Hunt. They weren't always lost because of Ben Hunt, if that makes sense. Do you reckon?
I think he just was more on the back end of the year.
I thought it was more the front.
Ooh. No, he had an awesome back end.
So do I, but I'm not on the leaderboard.
You're not running over people.
No, I'm just saying I've got a great back end.
I know you do, but you're not as pretty as Tarpany. I'm
prettier.
I would actually be a bit. Look, I'm kind of off the Dally M voting as is because I've never actually really liked the system. I know there's probably no better system, unfortunately. But even local football, I don't like 3-2-1 and how the system runs because it's, you know, listen to this podcast. It's very subjective on what a good, like a player does in the field. And, you know, you have players like, oh, what's that dickhead's name? Front row of the Tigers who commentates.
Like a roach.
So right, if he when he picks, he's always picking a forward. But then you got an outside back who picks it. You know, Michael Ennis is very good at dumbing down the hooker play when he's commentating because that's what he played. So it's very subjective as to who gets it. I know that, you know, I know they rotate every game, and I know, you know, that there is probably no better system, or there is, I'm not sure if there is or not. But the reality of it is I'm not the biggest fan of the 3-2-1 system in the NRL.
Could we just take the Rugby League Player Association winner as the Dally M?
Well, I would. Yeah, a lot of people last week, so we didn't know, I don't think we talked about it. A lot of people last week were criticising the players selected number 13. I think, was that the Players Association organised that? Mm. So all the players were polled and they were voted and they picked the top 13 out of the votes. I much prefer that because, you know, you see what happens on the fucking field.
Did you see what happened with the NRLW?
No, but what I was going to say, the fact that Joe Suwali was picked on the wing for this team by his peers, that was so significant to me because the guys who are playing against him are acknowledging him over Brian To'o, Josh Adokar.
So Brian To'o wasn't in the top four. It was Alex Johnson and Josh Adokar.
Yeah, but they're saying this 19-year-old kid who didn't top any leaderboards in the field, they're just on his pure ability, what he was doing all year.
Mm-hmm.
He got the award. I thought that was massive. And, yeah, I would much rather the players pick it.
Yeah. Well, and I talked about that. I said the only – we can't obviously have an opinion on it because we're not playing them. But looking at what they picked as well as a fan's perspective, the only two positions that I thought could have been different would have been Val Holmes in a centre position and probably Alex Johnson in a wing. And for the rest, I was like,
well, yeah, we don't know what it's like to play against these
guys.
And I remember when, you know, everyone who's listening who has played before, you know, you see players you're playing against or with who probably don't get the credit they deserve, but you know they're a lot more valuable to the team than an outside perspective would notice. And, you know, these players getting picked by their peers is massive. And, yeah, I really like that idea. I reckon it'd be great. But back to the Dally M's, I'm not the biggest fan of how it's run. It is what it is. Hopefully Ben Hunt wins it because I personally believe he deserves it.
So just to wrap up that one, for anyone who missed the last show, the Rugby League Players Association, how their voting works is each team has a Rugby League Player Association representative as one of the playing group. They pick three players from their own team that they believe have been the most outstanding players for their club. They cannot choose themselves. And then the fourth person, so I should have said, each club gets four players picked that are put forward. The RLPA representative picks three and then a advisory group picks the fourth player. So they could therefore select the Rugby League Players Association player if they so deem fit. And then so we've got 16 teams by four. Here we go, it's 40, 64 players. And all the NRL players then do a 3-2-1 based on the 64 players they have in front of them. And that's how it's selected. And they do it via position and all that sort of stuff. So it's a 3-2-1 system based on a select group picked within players from their own clubs. Yeah, they're obviously seeing them on the field, training paddock, all that sort of stuff. In the NRLW, they do the same thing. And what made it incredible, the Roosters ended up with four of the top five players, meaning that all four players that were put forward from the Roosters made it into the final five. So there was 24 players and all the other players from the other teams in some way put 3-2-1 for the four Roosters players to get there as well, with Tufua from Parramatta as well. And that's ridiculous odds if you try to predict that to happen. Talking about awards that I don't think anyone are going to argue about, the Maroons, as part of the QRL awards ceremony, Patrick Carrigan received the Ron McAuliffe medal as Queensland's player of the series. And there's going to be any arguments. Oh, sorry, not arguments. There's not going to be anyone shocked by that. And then Ben Hunt won the Fogg's Peter Jackson Memorial Award, which goes to the player or staff member who best demonstrated Queensland's trademark spirit. And I don't think anyone's going to obviously be shocked with that one either. Yeah. I think for most people watching, they were the two best players over the three games.
What would have made it interesting if Reuben Cotter didn't get injured? Because I thought he could have been a shoe-in for both of those awards at one point. But yeah, he did tear his hammy, which is disappointing because I'd love to see him, one, play for Australia this year, and two, get a full Origin series under his belt. Because, man, when he's on the field, any team he's playing for just looks better. He's so good.
Yeah, and he came back after the hamstring injury and didn't look out of place at all. He just
fucking killed it.
That's what you have if you have a simple game and you can play it with heart. Those players are so invaluable. I think of, do you remember Daniel Wagon?
Yeah, from Para.
Yeah, he was never an outstanding player, but the gap between his worst and best performance wasn't.
He wasn't as hard and powerful as Ben Kennedy, but that 2001 grand final when Wagon came up against Kennedy, it was a fucking epic battle. Mm. Like, Kennedy was definitely more of an enforcer, but Wagon, I think I heard Kennedy say at one time, he's just like, I hated playing against him because he just knew you weren't going to get past him.
Yeah, every single time. It was a plug and play. A coach could be like, oh, we need a second row, I'll put Wagon there. We need a lot of Wagon there.
And he's the Cotters, the Wagons, you know, they're not the sort
of... Bermore could turn into one of those sort of guys.
They're not the sort of player who's going to win you a grand final, but the sort of player you need in your team to win a grand final. Yes.
Yeah, perfect way to put it.
They just have to be. It's kind of like...
they're a glue guy. I call him a glue guy.
Yeah, like when Melbourne were very strong for that period, they had the Dallas Johnson, they had Ryan Hinchcliffe, Slade Griffin, those kind of dudes who were just going to go in there and play footy the whole time. There's no awards for them. Like Josh King they've got now. There's no accolades for them to a point, but there's as I said earlier, appreciation amongst the team and the guys who play against them. They're like, oh, this guy's good.
All right. On awards, let's get to the most important ones, which are our grades for the teams that have been knocked out. So,
I just want to... We're going to talk about the whole Penrith blow-up right now? Penrith and South Sydney blow-up?
Oh, we'll get to that when we look at the games themselves.
Okay.
This is just about the Cowboys and the Rabbitohs and how their seasons went. And I think I think this might be the first straight A grade, but Cowboys going from 15th in 2021 to third, the year after. And I was critical quite a lot last year with regards to Todd Payton and his handling, especially of Tamalolo and his play and the minutes he was given, broken hands and all that sort of stuff, how he was brought back with regards to all that. And I stand by those comments. How he utilised or what he did with Tamalolo in the off-season to get him back up and raring and the season he put together has to be commended. But I think that the most simple way for me to analyse the Cowboys is you look across their entire team, there is not one player who regressed, in my opinion. Every player either maintained or improved. And if maintain is the minimum, across an entire team, that's a massive success. To keep a squad of 30 at or above their skill level over a whole season is an incredible effort. And I think the players that are highlighted this year, Jeremiah Nanai, Murray Tulangi, Scott Drinkwater,
Tom Gilbert.
Tom Gilbert. So they've been a lot Cotter, in the spotlight. To me, the player that most is the most pure example of the Cowboys issue was Reece Robson. In that
weapon
last year, the gap between last year and this year for him wasn't big. He was really good last year, and yet he was even better this year. And he was one of the three RLPA hookers or dummy halves with Harry Grant and the winner who was Curacao. He was in the New South Wales squad for game three of State of Origin, and I would not be shocked at all if he's in the Australian squad.
I'd be very happy for him if he did.
He came up from Canberra, and we said then
it was George.
St. George? I saw he was at Canberra as well.
No, St. George.
My apologies. We said it was a good signing. I didn't see it turn into this sort of signing. I thought Jake Granville had the dummy half position sewn up, even though he'd had a poor season or two. There was no competition. And then Robson's just like, this is mine. And that was...
Yeah, look, the Cowboys this year, at the start of the year, top eight has flogged them and just went, guys, you paid this like X amount of dollars. Here's what we're going to do this preseason. We're going to catch a football. Like, he went back to basics, put him in the heat, made them fit, and just went, guys, look, last year we tried too much at attack. Our defense was shambles because we're overthinking. This is not think and just go back to, you know, under 12s level where we're just going to put the ball in front of your chest at all times, tuck the ball under your arm and run. And then whatever happens from that is just gravy. And this is what, and to be honest, a lot of teams could learn from that. Newcastle comes to the top of my mind, not just because I'm a Newcastle fan, just because they do have the quality in their team that is not fucking playing well together. And I feel like the fitness that Peyton put him through, the kind of, I'm not going to listen to anybody. We're going to go internally on ourselves to review and just was honest with each other and didn't have tickets on themselves either. Like they didn't, you know, you have players like Val Holmes and Chad Townsend and Jason Tamalolo who's done close to everything in the game. But on the other hand, they just went, you know what, I'm going to be on the same level as the guy who's shitting his pants rocking up the training for the first time. And they all gelled and the signings were smart with Luch. You know, everyone talks about it. Yeah, well, everyone talks about
the signing. Next year. Yeah.
Well, everyone talks about the signing of Chad Townsend, which was, you know, epic. Great signing for him, one of the top halves of the competition.
We can say that now. We both of us didn't say it then.
Well, no, we were actually more critical of Tom Dearden than Todd Dearden.
I think what we talked about was we understood the Chad Townsend thing. Neither of us understood the $800,000 and why you were paying him that much.
Yeah. But see, it was an interesting side story to Luciano Leilua because the only reason he transferred mid-year is because Michael Maguire got fired. They actually asked him to transfer early, but then Maguire blocked it. But when he got fired, Tigers like, and it was a disaster for the Tigers, but it was a great signing by the Cowboys, but in saying that too, he still had to work his way into the team. He was never just given a spot.
No.
He had to prove himself. And
he won't get one next year. Like, well, he won't be given one next year because Lukey comes back, even though Gilbert's going.
Yeah, Gilbert's going. Look, the reality of it is that...
Which is a good thing.
The best thing to say about the Cowboys is they went back to basics and it worked for them, and they can just build on from there. They just played tough, hard footy, and...
Exciting.
As I said, I really think Adam O'Brien needs to do a cheeky phone call to Todd Bade and just go, what'd you do, dude? Like, what's the – it's not a secret formula, but how do you find that balance between a 200 gamer and a zero gamer being on the same level but keeping everyone motivated at the same time? And which it seems like an easy equation to make if you're playing rugby league, but – the reality of it is teams can't handle that. Individual players can't handle that. Oh, mate, you're not putting in the same level as a fucking zero gamer. Whereas Todd Payton found that balance and it worked for him. They all bought in on it, which is just as important.
That's the thing. Buying in on the same message. And I think what they've done is, one, the recruitment's been top-notch. Two, they've blooded the correct youngsters on good timelines, but they've blended that with experience, both from within and without. And they've shown that you can put together a high level finals, at least. We can't say premiership yet, but high level roster while paying big money to a small number of players. And so I'm talking about here, they brought up Nanai, they brought up Cotter, they brought up Tulagi, they brought up Fidao, who they picked up. That was like a bonus. I don't think he would have been tracked to progress to this without that Nines tournament. They brought in a premiership winner in Townsend because they've lost one in Thurston.
I think a good one also is Drinkwater.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's depth. He was signed as competition. He was in the halves.
Excellent year. And he was not at all expected to hold on to get that number one jersey, but not hold on to it as well and play to the levels he played. Like he's a great player.
He was signed to come in as a half, really. And then they'd signed Dearden as well. I'm like, oh, odd. But I think you mentioned Newcastle. I think another club that could really pay attention to what the Cowboys are doing is Manly, with regards to they've got Trbojevic, Cherry Evans and Trbojevic on the big money. And you saw how poor that's left them, especially in the outside backs. You look at the Cowboys, they've got Holmes, Tamalolo and Townsend on big money. But you look at who they've plugged the gaps with. Talangi, that's been like a home run. Lukey, Nanai, Drinkwater, you said, with the recruitment, and Cotter, all these low money players who are playing way above their pay grade. It can't last forever, obviously. When their contracts run out, they'll require upgrades. And you look at Manly with regards to, you got Olakatu there, but Parker and Harper aren't in the same freaking stratosphere as these guys. They finally gave Tuipulotu a run and he's looked all right. Cotter's past Trbojevic, Tapau's leaving, and you're just like, who's taking those positions? Who the hell are they going to recruit? Kepi. Fuck's sake. And there's even talk about Manly picking up Ben Condon, who's a good, solid second row in the Cowboys system as well, who's not going to get a run because you've got Lukey, Leilua, Nanai, all these guys ahead. And I think they had a fantastic season. And with the age that their squad is at, the only player we know that's leaving is Conley Lamelu and Tom Gilbert. Tom Gilbert's going to be a huge loss based on his progress this year. But I have full faith in them being able to replace him. So it's an A across the board for me with regards to the Cowboys.
Yeah, they're done well.
Now, South Sydney. Now, what their record or something over the last 5 years is incredible. Outside of the fact that all of their seasons have finished with losses. Because what have they done over the last 5 years? Let's just run through it here and who they've lost. So from 2018 to 22, prelim, 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 runners up, prelim. Like, if you're looking for a club to have consistency of getting to within the chance of a premiership, despite a massive change, like going back to 2018, isn't they finished third on the table at the end of the regular season. Their coach was Anthony Seibold. Their captain was Sam Burgess. And their most try scorer was Jennings. I don't even know what Jennings that is. It's probably Robert Jennings. Well, that's how far back this success goes. So all the way through to 2022, where they finished seventh. Prelim, coach was Jason Demetriou. Captain's Cam Murray. Latrell Mitchell's their highest scorer. And Alex Johnson, for the third year in a row, is their top scorer, top try scorer. And 3 years in between that, you had Wayne Bennett, prelim, prelim, runners up. I knew that South had been successful. I didn't realise it was that consistent over the last 5 years. That's incredible and also incredibly frustrating, especially if you're a fan of them, that you haven't, they haven't won. To me, it's really hard to give a grade on that, in that they haven't improved overall in the last 5 years, but they finished no worse than third in 5 years straight. And for clubs like the Tigers or New Zealand or Newcastle or Manly or Titans, they'd be screaming out for consistency like that at that end of the table. I think when they started this year, to me, it was their weakest squad they've had in the last 5 years, with Gagai and Reynolds going, and they finished above both the teams that those guys went to and finished the season stronger than anyone else in the top eight, bar probably Canberra, and came up against the best team of the last 2 years in Penrith, and had a 12-0 lead on them early and then couldn't hold on, obviously. So the consistency side of me says C because they haven't improved, but then the other side of me says this is their worst team, so I give them an A. So I'm going to sit right in the middle for a B. That's my justification.
For the reasons,
like, B plus.
You know, I have a massive criticism of Parramatta for being to that level. I still maintain, and Walt's going to blow up about this, because they've been in top four for the last 5 years. They still made the same mistakes and they don't learn from the yada yada instead of them four. Whatever. I believe they don't win the grand final this weekend. It is technically a fail for them because this is their last chance as far as I'm concerned, and they've been up there for that entire time. The difference between South Sydney and Parramatta is, and you touched on it, is the fact that they lost a six-time premiership winning coach. And they lost a 300 gamer in Adam Reynolds at halfback and captain. On that note, Cam Murray for me has been unstoppable. Every compliment you can give a rugby league player, I think we should be giving to Cam Murray. He's 23 years old. He's taking a heritage club as captain. He just plays with his heart on his sleeve every single week. There's no difference between his good and bad games because he's just that consistent. He's just, and he's so damn good looking. It's freakish. Yeah, I love him. I love him. Every part of him.
He's on.
And then to also replace Adam Reynolds, you brought in, they banked on Lock of the Lights. At one point, he got dropped. I believe he's one of the best defensive halves in the competition. He's been absolutely amazing this year, especially in that game a couple of weeks ago where I think they lost. I can't remember. The first game they won in the final series, I can't remember who that was against. Roosters. He had Angus Crichton and that butcher running at him all game, and he fucking put him on their back the entire game, and it was good to see. So he's definitely progressed in the halfback. I think they can only get better for next year. I'm giving them a C, just because where they have been the last couple of years, but only giving them a pass mark just because they lost a six-time premiership winning coach, 250 gamer in Dane Gagai, and a 300 gamer in Adam Reynolds, which meant they had a rookie halfback and they had a floating centre week in, week out, because they didn't really know who was the best person to put there. You know, how you had Isaiah Tass, you had Jackson Paulo, you had Tane Milne. He had a few there, which is probably a bit of a knock on Jason Demetrio, because he told Lock on a Lice at the start of the year, mate, you got the seven until you fuck it up. But he didn't do that to a center, which I thought was a bit weird. But
that we know
it is what it is. Well, he never really gave anyone a long period of time at the start of the year. Like,
there were injuries and stuff. Oh, no, yeah, at the start of the year, no, it was.
Yeah, start of the year, he never really gave. I will admit, at the start of the year, I was putting a lot on Cody Walker, because, you know, he was a senior half now, and he needed to lead. I actually thought Lock and Elias, despite all the try assists and stuff like that, I don't think Cody Walker would have got all the try assists without Lock and Elias getting him in that spot. In saying that too, Cody Walker had a better year than I expected. Latrell Mitchell, once he came back, was absolutely killing it. On those two, I fucking hate their attitudes. I can't stand it. I really just don't like it. You know, they're the first ones in a fight, even though they're 50 meters away. You know, they'll be third man in every single time. You blow anything back at them, to them, You know, they cry foul. The pure arrogance of Latrell Mitchell.
It's a C in the end.
It is a C, but like a couple weeks ago against the Roosters where, you know, they came out and said no one died, but he got hit high and was just sat up looking at the referee going, fucking blow it. Like, he was doing my head in the entire game. I cannot deny his ability and Cody Walker's ability. I love what he brings on the field with the ball in his hand. He's strong defensively as well. But the way they go about it, I can't accept. I really can't. But yes, a C for them just because would have been a fail unless only because they lost the premiership winning coach and a 300 gamer in halfback.
All right. So on average, that gives them I gave them a high B, you gave them a C. That's a C B plus. To C plus to B minus. Yeah, B minus, C plus. There we go. All right. Signings. Raiders have announced they've secured Joseph Tafni till the end of the 2027 season. So put pen to paper on a 4-year extension, probably the biggest no-brainer contract we've seen. Sean Bloor has been extended at the West Tigers despite missing all of 2022 with an ACL injury. I love the fact that I love seeing it when a club will do that. We know that you've got the talent, you've been injured, you can't help that. We still believe in you. We're still going to extend your contract despite you not playing. That's awesome to see. He'll be there until the end of 2024.
And what I do like about that as well, is the fact that he did get injured and he had a lot of time is like between getting injured and earning that contract, which, you know, fair enough. But what that shows me that he was committed to his rehab as well. So because if he took that very lazily, I don't even know what's the word, but if he took that really relaxed, they wouldn't have been like, mate, see you later, like, fuck off. He would have been dieting correctly in there before. Yeah, that for me is a good sign.
Corey Thompson, the best example of punching above your size in the NRL, has announced his retirement after 8 seasons in the NRL. He was contracted for the Titans till the end of the 2023 season, but the club confirmed he's been released from the final year of his deal. He made his NRL debut in 2014, played 122 games across Bulldogs, Tigers and Titans. And a good news story as well to jump on the back of that, Delise Hoyter, he's 26, 28.
Yeah.
Kept a remarkable comeback story, signed a 2-year extension with the Broncos through the end of the 2024 season. I wouldn't mind giving him a crack. Man, I like what I've seen from him in the infrequent games that he's played.
He's a big dude too. Yeah. Like he brings that size out in the outside. He's not overly quick, but sometimes you don't need that. So he's a good depth player for me, and yeah, really good signing. So Broncos signed a few good ones because they signed that Tyson Smoothie,
yes,
from the Falcons. We talked about him earlier in the Broncos year. He's a Melbourne in the Melbourne system, played for the Falcons. I think he got Queensland Cup Player of the Year this year in a high achieving Falcons squad at hooker. I think having to rotate there. Now they have Billy Walters, Corey Pax. They got rid of Jake Turpin, Tyson Smoothie, and young Blake Moser. I think they've got a really good, strong, stable.
Yeah, Tyson Smoothie jumps right to the top of that for me, straight away.
Oh, look, Blake Moser's got a lot of raps on him. He's only 19.
Right now.
Tyson Smoothie's a quality player. He reminded me a lot of Harry Grant. And Harry Grant chose to stay because Cam Smith was about to retire. They couldn't offer that to Tyson Smoothie. So, yeah, keep an eye on Tyson Smoothie on that. You'll be pretty good signing for the Broncos.
With regards to judiciary, so Viliami Kikau has entered an early guilty plea and will take his place in Sunday's grand final. Charlie Staines will be eligible after he entered an early guilty plea for a grade one shoulder charge as well. Tane Milne will miss 6 games for smacking Spencer Leno in the face, basically. Jason Tamalolo, on the other hand, has been sidelined for 3 games, charged with dangerous contact. Now, he was
sitting
on Zaya Papali'i in the 15th minute. Now, with an early guilty plea, Tamalolo will miss the opening 3 matches of Tongan's World Cup campaign. And he brought up a really good point with regards to he was suspended in an NRL game. How does that, why should he miss international fixtures due to that? It'd be like saying picking up an international fixture ban in the World Cup and having to serve it in the NRL the following season. He said a lot more eloquently than I just did then. I think he's got a decent point. And 100%, if the Cowboys had gotten through to the grand final and kick out and the Panthers hadn't, Tamalolo would have been let off with an early guilty plea and kick out would have had 3 weeks.
I'm 100% agreeing with that. I'm well off that. But my opinion is that like it was a pretty significant hit Tamalolo did.
Yeah,
it was. And I don't think Papali'i even had the ball in his hand at that time.
No, it was late.
I think it was after the fact. And for that reason, he deserves to be punished. And what for him? I know he's not a repeat offender, but
no, he was. That was his third charge. But what people also didn't know is once you got to the finals, it was a clean slate again, kind of like Origin.
Well, that's a load of shit, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I think my point is that I hate saying it about Tamalolo, but it's the only way he's going to learn. Like, if it was Jarrell Hargraves, I think would be like, fucking, yeah, right, cop that, mate. But Tamalolo's probably got, as you said, free, this is his third charge. That'd be up there with Rhea Hargraves.
But the thing, they didn't even put it down as a shoulder charge. It was a grade 2 dangerous contact.
Well, it still was dangerous contact.
Yeah, but it was also a shoulder charge.
But reality of it is, I personally believe that for these guys, the only way to learn is to lose games that you care about.
Yeah, I believe it was definitely a punishable offense, but it is. It's completely separate to international fixtures.
I'd like to ask you.
The Cowboys missing him for the first 3 weeks next year. With how close it was this year, could be enough.
But the question I've got for you is that if you believe that rep games and NRL games should be separate, what happens if he never plays another rep game after this World Cup? He never gets suspended for it.
Huh?
Well, what happens if Jason Tamalolo, or if it was a lesser-known player in the same situation, get suspended in an NRL game, in a World Cup game. Sorry.
Okay, now it makes more sense. All right,
and never gets picked for an international game again. Like, where's the line?
So I could see that argument in that scenario, but also see it being
it goes much
more
ways.
Likely. No, so I can't.
It does. It goes both.
Keep going. I don't know if I can jump on that, only because, like, you look at, there's an international league in Australia. There's the NRL in Australia. You've got the Super League in Great Britain. You've got the, there's now an American League in America. If they get suspended in the American League, is that going to, are they then going to be banned from the American team in the World Cup? Would it be the same as an English player being banned in the World Cup for saying they did in Super League?
No,
But like, if you do it from the NRL, you have to do it with every other domestic rugby league.
I agree. The only thing that's probably against this is that the ESL, like say for example, a couple of years ago when Ben Flowers, I think his name was, absolutely destroyed Lance O'Hare and one of the biggest dog shots I've seen in the NRL in the grand final, and he got suspended for like 18 weeks. I don't think the NRL would have upheld that. That's more of a concern for me if he... So imagine he was signed by Manly. I don't think the NRL would have upheld his 18-week ESL suspension. So I think that's where commingling needs to happen. But I have no issue with him suffering for this because, as I said, there's no justification where he might never play for an international game again. He's got to be punished somehow.
Yeah, I also think that they need to find a balance in that the biggest thing that rugby league has been pushing the last 3, 4, 5 years is the growth of the game internationally.
Oh, I hate that justification.
I'm not using it as a justification yet, but...
yet.
There's... What he did in this game in no way impacts the World Cup whatsoever at all. It's completely... It's almost a different sport. It's a completely different topic. It'd be like a player in the English Premier League getting a red card and then missing a World Cup game for their country. There's no chance in hell that would happen.
I don't No chance. Care.
And it's a much bigger sport with much more spotlight and everything on it. It'd be almost amateur hour. No, it's not. Regular league is such a small, little, insignificant sport on the world stage that if you're making decisions like this, it shows how far behind you really are with regards to how you understand it on a world stage.
And then you'd bloody show them what he did to Papali and then have fucking heart attack because that's how horrible, big it was.
But it's also in a domestic league, which has nothing to do with this tournament.
Doesn't matter. I don't. There's a lot of things that we all know we don't like how soccer's run, and the fact that soccer's a pussy sport. So relax.
Really not. No. But yeah.
Reality of it is he needs to be punished,
and he will be. He'll miss the Cowboys' first three games next year, which is a big punishment.
Because as you still haven't explained how the other way it works, how it could be justified.
Say this happened in the first game of the World Cup, you'd miss the next three World Cups without Tamalolo. I don't know, I'm not going to put a percentage chance on it, but they're going to find a hell of a lot harder to make it through without him there. If it had happened in the final, he'd be ineligible for selection for the next three games or whatever. If he's
3 years.
3 games.
No, Tonga don't play one game a year.
Well, then it'd be 3 years. The
World Cup. That's crap.
Hey, you said you wanted him to miss the number of games. Why is that crap? There's still 3 games.
No, it's not. I believe he should miss out the first 3 games for Cowboys.
That's what I mean. If he doesn't now.
I said if by your model, if he doesn't international, he loses out in international. If Tonga only play one game every 3 years, he's going to take 3 years to serve a suspension.
Yeah, it's not going to work either.
That's crap.
All right, we'll roll it over to the next season then. If it's a rep game. Well, it's not even a rep game. It's an international game. I'll put it into a separate category.
It's representative. It's a rep game.
It's technically a rep game, and I'm not going to put that in the same category as an international fixture.
Yeah, but it's the same. It's a representative. It doesn't matter what level it is. It's still a representative game.
It doesn't benefit.
Reality of it is that
it doesn't benefit anybody.
It doesn't matter.
The argument there is Tamalolo needs to learn a lesson, but the biggest loser out of this isn't Tamalolo. It's going to be Tonga. It's going to be the World Cup. It's going to be rugby league. That's the biggest loser, not Tamalolo.
Mate, stop. You can't make rules for certain people and not.
I'm not. I'd say this is a blanket for everybody. If someone gets sent off in the grand final, they should still be eligible for the World Cup. It's got nothing to do with the NRL grand final.
You can't make decisions based on that. You cannot.
You're trying to say that the NRL and the World Cup are the same competition.
As far as suspensions, they should be.
No, they can't be.
And do you know who loses out from that?
No, I'll put it another way. That'd be like saying he does this in his last game in the NRL, goes to the Super League, he got suspended in the NRL in the grand final for 3 games. He should have to serve that in the Super League.
That's what I said 5 minutes ago.
That's fucking stupid.
No, it's not.
It's a completely separate company.
Go back to what I said 5 minutes ago with Ben Flowers, okay? So imagine he signed with fucking Roosters. In the grand final of a game, 3 minutes in, Lance Hyde's laying down the ground. He does come over to the top and break his fucking jaw.
Yeah.
Knocking out for 6 minutes, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Do you honestly believe that he should, and he got suspended for 16 weeks, do you honestly believe he should get a run next week in the NRL?
Do I honestly believe he should? Yeah. No. But should he have the chance? Yes.
No, but if he signed with Roosters, like I said. If the club's
dumb enough to sign him, then yeah.
No, but he signed with Roosters before that fact. Before that happened. Oh,
if he'd signed with the Roosters beforehand? Yes. Well, then yes. But that's completely different to signing for the crap.
I think that there should be agreement before. No, it's
not crap. He's an employee breaking the rules of his own club. No, there should be
agreement amongst all national competitions.
No, they're not going to happen.
There should be.
Yeah, but they won't. So it's there's no point discussing it. It doesn't.
What's the idea of suspension?
A couple of egos of a couple of pin of judiciary. That's all it's going to serve.
No. What is the idea of suspensions, Adam? What is the point?
To try and enforce player safety.
No, to try and reduce the amount by punishing the players.
Yeah, for player safety. If you do it less, the point of them being in there is that players don't get hurt illegally.
So if you made an international thing, a rule on that, wouldn't that reduce? Otherwise, you'd have players transferring to other comps.
That's a completely separate point to this, and it's not going to happen. So there's no point discussing it. That's not going to happen.
It doesn't matter if this is all hypothetical as well. Reality of it is the only way to enforce the people, stop people doing is take away things they don't. It's like a fucking child.
The NRL has no say in whether he serves a suspension at the World Cup. It'll be an International Rugby League decision, not an NRL decision.
It's already been made.
No, it hasn't. It'll be changed.
He's not playing the first three games.
He will be.
He's not. And to
who said that? IRL or NRL?
I lose out of this as a viewer. That should not be something the NRL should follow up on. That is a load of shit.
They'd hate to make money.
It's not. They'll get money either way.
If the NRL has made the decision of suspending for three games, sweet. But they can't go to the IRL.
Reality of it is,
you can't let him play.
If we both had enough money, if we both were flying over to England to watch the World Cup, and the first game we got to see was the Tonga versus whoever the hell they're playing. Mm. You and me, and I'd be very disappointed if you didn't. I'd probably go by myself.
Mm.
You would not go to Ticketmaster or whoever's the organization organizing it and going, I need a refund. And they go, what is the reason you need a refund? Because the International Rugby League approved Jason Tumalo's suspension. If you did that, that is ridiculous.
I think the whole hypothetical that you just said is ridiculous. If we had that much money, we'd be in like less than 1% of the population. We wouldn't care, but we're not.
That is not the whole point. My point is you are not handing in your ticket because Jason Tumalo is not playing. Guarantee you.
I'd be pretty pissed off, though.
No, you wouldn't hand your ticket in and they're not going to lose any money out of it, are they?
Well, no one's going to fly all the way around the world to watch the opening game of Tonga anyway.
Oh, sweet Jesus, dude. Stop overthinking this stuff.
No, I think you are, man.
No, you are, because you're not handing in your ticket because Jason Tumalo is not playing.
It's literally
one is doing that.
It's literally like me being...
Bottom line is you're picking apart the wrong part of the hypothetical. Reality.
It's like me being put on leave at my school and that affecting my employment at a private school.
Well, what'd you do? Do you knock someone out?
Could have.
Yeah, that means it should be affected as a teacher. If you knock out any stakeholder within a school, that should be an investigation.
True.
But reality of it is,
I'm just saying that private
those
schools
kids,
would still be
those,
able to employ me with
those
that.
Those kids are going to rock up and pay for their private school.
Regardless if I'm there or not.
You didn't get there. Yeah, exactly. So they're not losing any money out of this. Stop it.
Yeah. Taylor May, let's just put it this way. I don't know if this is an advantage for Penrith or Parramatta, but Taylor May has failed to recover in time for a hamstring injury or miss the grand final. That means Charlie Staines goes in. So I don't know if it's a win for either team. Maybe Parramatta? Yeah, probably Parramatta. Tom Opacek has been left out due to a hamstring problem as well. Which means Bailey Simonson has been named.
Well, we'll get to this on the preview.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's just injuries from the weekend. All right, we went down to my wife and I and my two kids went down to Suncorp on Sunday to watch the two NRLW prelim matches. It was my kids' first time at Suncorp, and they'd been at Moreton Bailey Stadium and Sunshine Coast Stadium, and they said they were massive. And then when they saw Suncorp, like they were just in awe, and we had an awesome couple of games down there. Unfortunately, they were two of the most boring NRLW games of the season. Knights pretty much rolled Dragons. Emma Tonegata was awesome watching her live. She's just in everything. Communication in defense was awesome to see. But the Dragons as a squad just did not click. They had enough chances. They had plenty of chances. to break the Knights line, but couldn't. Knights defense was won them, or put them in a position to win this game, because then they piled on the points in the second half. Tamika Upton was brilliant. She was the most, she just caught your eye anywhere she was on the field. Attack, defense, cover defense, positioning. She was just everywhere, and was very much value for her try. And the Knights looked, I'm not going to say clinical, confident. But yeah, confidence is a good word. They, clinical wasn't the right word. They got a late try in the first half to take it up 18-6. But they were never, they didn't look in danger of losing the game, because anytime the Dragons got close to the try line, there were Knights players there in numbers. Dragons were held up a couple of times. Then they were starting to push the play because they felt they had to create the magic play in order to score. And that's what it felt like being there. Even the Dragons were attacking the end that we were at. The Knights defense was so calm and so collected, and you could hear the communication, because there were only 5,000 people there. We could actually hear everything that was going on. It was really cool. And yeah, like watching that, I'm like, oh, they're going to give Roosters a run for their money. And then the Roosters and Parramatta game was on, and looking at the Parramatta changes that they, that were enforced through injuries, etc. I'm like, oh man, this is going to be a bloodbath. Roosters are going to absolutely roll them. It just didn't happen. Parramatta just played with more. They played like Ruben Cotter. They just were determined. They didn't give the Roosters any space. Anytime Bremner was trying to pop around the ruck, they were shutting it down. Isabel Kelly ran for 200 metres, but they were grinding metres. They weren't, I'm in space, here's a breakaway metres. She was trying to get herself involved, and it was evident there. I wouldn't have pegged her for 202 metres. It didn't feel like she got that much despite her being that involved. Kennedy Cherrington starting was a huge, huge move for Parramatta, and really paid off. Instead of her coming off the bench, started in the number 14, played 61 minutes. But it, let's just say, a Ruben Cotter game's never exciting, but it's going to be a grind, and that's how Parramatta got this one. 24-10, limited the chances for the Roosters to score or break their line, and I'm not even going to say the Roosters were complacent, because they weren't. They just didn't look good. They weren't clicking. Their tries were separated in the 17th and 64th minute, whereas the Eels scored throughout and played a very consistent game and were good value for the win.
There was one point where Parramatta weren't even going to make the finals.
Well, Wall called it on the last episode. He said Parramatta had the feel of the Roosters last year. Just scraped into the finals. Were taken on the undefeated Broncos. Roosters beat them. Went on to the grand final, won that, and have been undefeated since then. Eels just snuck into the finals, coming up against the undefeated Roosters. It's literally mirror image of last year of what the Roosters did to the Broncos, and now Eels have done to the Roosters. Can they take that extra step and do the same against definitely a more fancy Knights team?
Yeah, first time ever Knights in a long time actually being this confident. I mean, this confident of winning something.
I knew it had to happen. Like, four of the six teams in my four most disliked teams in the comp, and so you got Eels versus Knights, my two least favorite. I'm just, but I will watch it because I appreciate them as athletes and what they do and what they've achieved. So congratulations to the two teams for making the finals, and Parramatta in their second season, going from a very unsuccessful first season through to grand final in their second.
That's Newcastle. Thank you very much.
Yes, first Newcastle. And on the Parramatta theme, unfortunately, we'll have to jump off the Newcastle theme. Eels 24, defeating the Cowboys 20 up in Townsville. And this did not look like how this game was going to go early on. Got to be honest.
That's a good point. Cowboys, you know, they received the kickoff, and on the third tackle, they shot it out to their right.
Yep.
Made about 40 metres off that run, and I was like, oh, hey, we're on here.
Here we go.
Cowboys, you know, can play a bit of footy, and, you know, Parramatta, in my opinion, is the best attacking team in the comp, so this is going to be a fun game to watch. The first try came from definitely against play.
Yes.
Like against a run of play.
Are we going to say try? We're going to say try in quotations.
No, it's a try. Look, there was a lot of shit going on about it. I honestly believe it was a forward pass, and I'm
a bit filthy. We got our sports mixed up with NFL.
When you actually watch it, I wasn't watching. First you see the ball go forward, but my next view was where the touchy was. Fuck, mate, he was right in line with that shit. He didn't call it. It was bad. And I'm someone who doesn't criticize referees, but holy shit. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was a bad call. But then, there was a few kind of, I don't know, call return calls or get you calls, because there was a few six agains that I was like, oh, that's a bit rough.
The difference Cowboys is it's a try scoring.
Yeah, I know, but it
can never guarantee the rest go to a try.
I thought that was some pretty dodgy calls going against Parramatta.
Yeah, it wasn't a well-refereed game overall.
But yeah, but the reality of it is, in that last 10 minutes, Cowboys had their chances.
They do.
To score. They attack. They'll spend the last 10, 15 minutes just attacking Parra's line. And full credit to Parra, there's two things I want to say about this, is that their scramble in that 10, 15 minutes was just epic. There was one moment, I'm pretty sure, where Scott Drinkwater ran into like a 15-meter gap and about three people tackled him, and it was only about 20 meters out from the line. It was really, really good from Parra. And I will cop it on the chin about Parra, but them coming back from an 8-point lead, 8-point deficit to win a game is very surprising to me. Throughout the last couple of years, when Cowboys got that 8-point lead, I was like, this game's done. Like, there's no way Parra can come back from that, because they're not known for their comebacks like that.
I just pictured Darwin, because it was the only time they versed each other this year.
And
as soon as Cowboys got on top, they just ran away. And
So I was kind of like, oh, here we go, done here. But full credit to Parra, they came back, they won it. And then, our third point was, I'll give him credit as well, they won where Mitch Moses didn't have his best game.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out after he had a lot of shit going on. Grandmother of mother. So a family member passed away, and he had his first child during the week. And that's a hell of an emotional week. That day. So he hell of an emotional week for a young fella. But he had a good run. He didn't have his best game, but Parramatta was still able to win without that happening, which I don't think many people would have expected.
So I used this during the Origin series, and Jared didn't listen to me. I went talking about outlier performances, and I was proved correct in the end of the series.
You were not. I at really all. Was. You didn't listen to me at all.
I really was. But
for some reason, you don't listen to me, what I'm saying, and just
pick my one specific point held firm through the whole thing. But looking at this, I would like to see every Cowboys match from this season that aligns to these statistics the closest. I would put money down that they would win 95 to 100% of the games from this season. Because looking at it all, and Jared mentioned the chances the Cowboys had, they should have won this game. And if this was an example of it, was the Darwin game, when they absolutely towered up Eels with very similar stats. They had 6 minutes more ball. They had 8% more possession. Their completion rate was better. They had 30 more runs with the ball than the Eels. They had 200 extra meters, 150 extra post-contact meters. Like, they dominated possession of this game.
Stats mean fuck all.
No, they don't. That's why it's an outlier. The difference here was the Cowboys all season have made the most of their chances when they've got them. And Parramatta have, as Jared said, generally crumbled under this sort of pressure, and the game's got away from them before they can mount any sort of comeback. And the Eels force the Cowboys into pushing their hand and forcing their hand more than I've seen them have to do the last 6 weeks at least. And you could see Townsend was frustrated. Drinkwater was trying more than he and he always plays on the edge more than what he's doing. And at the end of every set, the Eels players are on their, they're on their knees. They're exhausted, as they should have been, because the effort they were putting in to stay in the game, to give themselves the chance to win it, which they did, and they capitalized on it, you had to give them credit for. And it's not a performance we've seen often from the Eels over the last, 3 years, 4 years? When they beat Melbourne in Melbourne, it was more like a to-and-fro game the whole way through. This had the feel, once the Cowboys got in front, that they were going to roll them and just take, go away with it. And even, I was still confident the Cowboys were going to win with a minute to go. Well, they'll find a way to score, it's Parramatta. And at the end, I went, holy fuck.
Well, when was the last time you saw
I'm surprised.
Kyle Felt put his foot out in that situation.
When's the last time I've seen Regal Campbell-Gillard score 2 tries? He'd only scored one.
He'd
only scored one so far this year, and he's got a double.
Bottom line is stats mean fuck all in a game of football when it comes to that kind of that kind of level. It doesn't mean a thing.
That's why Jared's never going to be a coach.
Oh, mate, I would love to be a coach against you.
It'd be easy.
I would love it. You'd be like, oh, that guy made 30 tackles. I'm like, that guy made 15, but they all counted. And you'd be like, well, I'd love it. I'd enjoy myself so much because you just had your little stats book and I'd be like, let's play football.
You'll learn one day.
So
that's why you always lose the argument against, well, with Parramatta being successful, because stats dictate that they've been pretty successful.
Do you really want to get into this?
No, we always win, so let's not. Let's go to the second game.
Fuck it. You brought it up.
Panthers 32 over the Rabbitohs 12. My point
with that is, and I said it earlier, and you actually agreed that
Be quick with it. Let's go.
Well, same thing with South. They last 3 years of being very successful. They didn't win the grand final. I think they would have failed if they didn't lose the thing. Parramatta have had the exact same team. And you're like, you know what? Let's be happy with them just making the prelim or just making the grand final. No, they fail if they don't make the grand final because they have the team to do it. I don't care what you say or anyone else says, that if you're choosing mediocrity as a positive, you are not allowed around the NRL. That's the bottom line.
And if you rewind this episode, the only teams that were mediocre that I mentioned were Knights, Tigers, all those less than mediocre teams that would take mediocrity every day of the week. I didn't mention Parramatta.
That if you're a highly successful team, making the prelim is not a positive thing.
Okay.
So I don't know what you're talking about, mediocre, but the teams bringing up Tigers
that haven't been making the prelims consistently would take that any day of the week.
Yes, but that's where the issue arises, that if you think they're going to take that every day of the week, they will. Parramatta shouldn't have that expectation, should
they? I don't remember putting Parramatta in that same group of teams. I said Knights, Tigers, Titans.
The whole conversation started on para, though. Like, this is how the basis Penrith of the 32, conversation.
Rabbitohs 12.
It's ridiculous. You just choose what you want to listen to sometimes.
Rabbitohs got a 12-0 early lead. Then this has happened a couple of times with Penrith this year where teams have got an early lead against them. And it says they have not done enough to have not done more when the opportunity's been there to make the lead better or try to take the game further away from Penrith than they should or could. And this is another example of that. And the big swing, and Jared talked about this pre-episode, was the introduction of Afsai Korosau. So they started with Mitch Kenny as they did in week one against Parramatta. You look at when Penrith scored their tries and their points twice in the last 5 minutes before halftime to raise that 12-0 early lead from the Rabbitohs. And then an 18-0 second half. 18-0? 20. Sorry, 20-0 second half with that penalty goal. Yeah. And then Cleary running through for like the easiest grubber and collection try you'll ever see. with no pressure. Now, there's been, what, one game really all year where you've seen Cleary's kicking game completely nullified, and that was the first State of Origin.
I'll say it was the third State of Origin.
Well, the first one where all his bombs went, like, straight up in the air and did nothing. And
yeah, I'll say it was the third one when he got more shut down. The third one was more.
Okay, well, first two examples then. There we go. It's easy to say, why don't more teams just do that? I'm also going to say, why don't more teams just do that? It's, I don't know. I'm not going to consider it an entire blueprint because it's a collection of the best players in the game, but it is interesting every week how well Ivan Cleary has outthought other coaches to ensure that Cleary continues to get so much time to make decisions and kick. And obviously, credit goes to his forwards and the quick play, the balls and all that sort of stuff that come from training, the setups to ensure that where Cleary's positioned behind the ruck or on either side based on what the outcome of the fifth tackle is going to be, to provide him with the most amount of time as possible. I marvel at how for this long a period of time, teams have found it so hard to nullify. It's incredible.
But that's what the great players are, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Yeah. I give credit to him, but there's also all the systems behind it that provide a platform as well. And obviously, Cleary's mm-hmm. good enough to make his own platform when required. But a coach's job is to get the best out of the players, which means putting them in the best position as possible to get the most out of them. So in order for them to succeed, and it's the combination that the coach and the players have at this club right now, how in sync they are and how in sync everyone is. It's incredible to watch.
It's scary.
Yeah. They're one of those teams where it's Greek mythology, that creature, you cut off one head and it grows back like two heads. That's kind of like penalty. You shut down kick out and they bypass him with a bum ball or a face ball or whatever and just use him as a decoy for the rest of the game because they're double teaming him.
I think the issue people have is not shutting down Cleary. I don't think that's what teams need to focus on. I think that the teams need to focus on shutting down Yo. Because Yo, despite I personally believe the artistry that Nathan Cleary does, his kicking game, his precision and all that kind of stuff, Yo is the backbone of that. And I think that's more of a priority to a lot of teams to somehow nullify Isaiah Yo, which will go a bit further in nullifying Penrith's attack.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't like Cleary's still good. He's the best halfback in the comp right now. You know that fluctuates a fair amount, but just after he came back from that 5-week suspension, has just been the best halfback all year for the last two games he's played. That Parramatta game, he came back, he's ripped them apart for fun. But I just believe that he couldn't have the time, space, and the thought process without Isaiah. And I think if that's the key to shutting down Penrith, shut down Yo.
I can 100% go along with that. And that's, I think it falls in line with the coach and knowing his players and what they're best at. And I wouldn't be surprised if Yo's instructions from Ivan Cleary do differ based on the style of team they're playing. He's going to have games where he's a meter eater and just wants him to use his footwork and speed through the middle and look to be a try scoring option himself. And there are going to be times where he'll say, I want you on the taking the hit up on the second tackle or third tackle, because on the fourth tackle, I need you to be the link to Cleary to give him good ball, to give him space, to give us Luai's an option on the other side. And then he understands Yo's skill set and has enhanced it through coaching. I would not be surprised in that at all, because then, yeah, they shut down Yo. It's going to make Cleary's job harder. It could be enough in a game like this to throw him off kilter a little bit. On the other side, I also think Parramatta is going to have a plan B, C, D, and E anyway. But I do agree in that if you can cut the communicate or the lines of I'm going to say communication, even though that's not what I mean, from Yo to Cleary, I'd be interested to go back and watch the Origin games and see how much of that occurred, because I still do remember Yo having quite a strong performance. I just can't remember which game it was, whether it was the second game where they were on par. But I do feel as though he played really well in the first game.
Yo isn't – in a game like Parramatta, against the top teams, Yo doesn't do the media readage. He can transition that throughout the game depending on the game's atmosphere at the time.
Mm.
But he is a massive source in the big games of Cleary and Luai getting the room they do. So for Parramatta to do that, what they need to do is shoot up on either side of Yo, of his A defender, his A defenders need to shoot up.
Mm.
So that creates that funnel where he will need to run. Because reality of it is that if you've got your A defenders shooting up and blocking the second man ball that Yo gives, he can't kick it. And if you do it correctly, all he has to do is run. And if you can do that, I personally believe that's how you're gonna lock up the kickouts, the Clearys, the Dylan Edwards kind of thing.
I was gonna say, do you think that would open up more chances for Dylan Edwards through the middle?
He when you look at him, when you look how he plays, he's a sweet
player.
He's a master of the short ball and the deceptive short ball. So he's the one who walks up, comes up with someone and drops them. Not drops them. He can drop them, but he generally goes behind the back at the last minute where it looks like it's going short ball. He's not a long passer. He's never done that. He's just a very deceptive short passer. He's not a long passer, so he's a very deceptive short passer.
If you're shooting up here to force him back through the middle, it would be like a little ball off the hip sort of thing to maybe an Edwards running through the middle.
Yeah. Look, that's a risk you make, but unfortunately, this is the only way to stop Yo from doing that, because Penrith's ability to cut you out on the edges and create that overlap is the fact that Isaiah Yo, Moses Leota, and James Fisher Harris pass the ball amongst all three of them, which draws in the outside defenders. So you've got to cut those first two passes out to make sure your winger is sorted, essentially, because they essentially create a 10-man backline instead of a 6 or 7.
I wonder if you did the reverse umbrella and just didn't hit up through the middle, hit up on the edges only, and just let the props run.
Oh, fuck, righto. That's a hard game to play. A lot of teams have tried that. But, I think that's the end for us, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Prime Minister's 13 games, beltings, a few players put their hands up. I'd say most notably probably Josh Adokar. I'd assumed he'd be in the squad anyway.
I thought Josh King had a good game against a bigger pack, against a big PNG pack.
The fact that pretty much the entire starting squad was on the bench for the last 10 minutes of the first half. They'd run up enough points as it was at that stage. It was a hard game to get a gauge of any bolters, I guess, for the squads. Cherry Evans, Crichton, Burton, Adokar.
I think Fasim Wally. Now down his prop position.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the reason why he's not the keynote speaker at our school sport awards night this year. He'll be picked for Australia.
He'll be the starting 10 for Australia by far. It's an easy slot for me.
He had a ripper. So that'll do us, guys. We'll be back with the grand final preview show on Wednesday, Thursday Friday night, something like that. Whichever night works best for us and our small families. Young families, actually. Mine are small in stature as well. Apart from that, we'll see you next time.
See you.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio.